Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Peabody Awards, given for the body most like a pea. No, not even close. Given for outstanding something in broadcast journalism, were awarded this week. And one of the winners was Brian Williams and the NBC Nightly News for their continuing coverage of Hurricane Katrina. Now, the great thing about the Peabody Awards is once you get it, you can kind of forget covering the story that you got it for. So hence, not even on NBC Nightly News, the Peabody Award-winning NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, would you have heard this week. Talk about news from outside the bubble. And this is inside the bubble. Dateline Washington. You can't get more inside the bubble than that. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bet good money or bad money, which your choice, that you didn't hear this story wherever you were listening or watching this week. Quote, in the closest thing yet to a mea culpa, the commander of the United States Army Corps of Engineers acknowledged on Wednesday of this week that a, quote, design failure, unquote, led to the breach of the 17th Street Canal levee that flooded much of New Orleans following Hurricane Katrina. Lieutenant General Carl Strock told a Senate committee, so this was under oath, ladies and gentlemen, that the Corps neglected to consider the possibility that flood walls atop the canal levee would lurch away from their footings under significant water pressure and eat away at the earth barrier below. Quote, we did not account for that occurring, Strock said after the hearing. It could be called a design failure, unquote. I guess that's a locution designed to point out that that's one of the non-profane things it could be called. A botched design has long been suspected by independent forensic engineers probing the levee failures. A panel of engineering experts confirmed it last month in a report saying the eye wall design could not withstand the force of the rising water of the canal and triggered the breach. Until Wednesday, the Corps, which designed and oversaw construction of the levees, had not explicitly taken responsibility for the mistake. And in fact, National Public Radio reported in March that an 800-page federal panel explicitly said there was no blame attaching to the Corps or any other federal agency for the, what independent forensic examiners have called, a man-made disaster. Quote, we have now concluded we had problems with the design of the structure, unquote, Strock told members of the subcommittee. We had hoped, he continued, that wasn't the case, but we recognize it is the reality. See, even the Corps of Engineers has hopes and dreams. Experts from the National Science Foundation, the external review panel for the Corps, said potential problems have been known for some time. How long is some time? They cited a 1986 study by the Corps that warned of just such separations in such flood walls. But Strock told the panel the Corps was unaware of the potential hazard before Hurricane Katrina drove a massive surge of water against New Orleans' storm protection system. He said the Corps is evaluating all the levees to see whether they too could fail in the same way. Quote, there may be other elements in the system designed that way that may have to be addressed, he said. A lawyer who has filed a class action lawsuit over the levee failures said Strock's statement may mean little for his case because the Corps is immune from legal liability by virtue of a 1928 law that put the agency in the levee building business. Or business. So, just to review, ladies and gentlemen, although the Peabody Award-winning NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams was too busy covering the Katie Leaves and Meredith Arrives story to mention this, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has now admitted that design and construction flaws by his agency caused the drowning of New Orleans. If you guys want to give the award back, it's okay by me. Hello, welcome to the show. At least don't put it on the wall, okay? From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you. I say welcoming so often I just slide by it, but really, welcome. Sit down, set a spell, set for just about 50 more minutes to this edition of the show. Did I say from the edge of America? Yeah, I forget what I say. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the big news of the week. From the Guardian, of all places in England. Scientists believe they may have found a reason why men are more likely to take some illegal drugs and why women are more prone to depression. That would solve everything. Really. A U.S. study has revealed that men produce more happy chemicals in their brains after taking amphetamines compared with women. This is your man on drugs. The neurotransmitter dopamine, hey, who you calling a dopamine, is 3 times higher in the brains of men who have taken amphetamines compared with women. According to the research. Gals, what's wrong with you? Men also reported feelings of being more confident, having more energy, and being more sociable. Hi, how you doing? Than women did. Scientists believe the findings will help shed light on why men use more drugs, because there are more. Oh, I see what you mean, more than women. As well as giving new insights into diseases linked to dopamine levels, including Parkinson's, memory loss, depression, memory loss, and schizophrenia. 28 men and 15 women aged 18 to 29 were examined for the study at Johns Hopkins. The dopamine levels in their brains were measured while they were under the influence of amphetamines. Scientists have suggested the dopamine levels could be due to women's bodies being better at eliminating the drug from the brain, an action linked to estrogen. Separate research published this week adds to evidence that older women who have one or two drinks a day may be guarding themselves against declining brain functioning.
I knew that's what you were doing.
The report was published in the Journal of the American Heart Association and found that of more than 3,000 women average age 69, those who regularly consumed lower levels of alcohol scored 20% higher in mental cognition tests than did those who steered clear totally of alcoholic drinks. All right, then. So, it's not an excuse. It's not an explanation. It's just science, ladies and gentlemen. No wonder the Bush administration is scared of it. It's science stuff. Who knows where that leads? And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
I think this may be a first, a news story that generated two apologies. Here, of course, the first on the floor of the House this week. Coming right up. Here it is now.
I am sorry that this misunderstanding happened at all, and I regret its escalation, and I apologize.
Representative Cynthia McKinney, who was facing a possible federal charge of assaulting a Capitol policeman, whom she said refused to recognize her. She was not wearing her Capitol lapel pin, and she had changed her hairdo. The other apology comes from Atlanta talk radio host Neil Bortz. That's right, Boer is two-thirds of Bortz, who, looking at the picture of Cynthia McKinney's new hairdo, said she looks like a, quote, ghetto slut, unquote. A day or two later, Bortz said, quote, I've known Cynthia McKinney for a long time. There's no way in the world that that word should be used to describe her or her hairdo or any woman. He had gone on in the original March 29th broadcast to say she had a, quote, ghetto trash haircut and looked like a welfare drag queen that was trying to sneak into the building. In issuing the apology, Bortz added, it won't mean anything to people who consider any negative comment or criticism of any type at any time about anybody who is not white to be racism. Eh? A young, ambitious Key West, Florida filmmaker said he'd acquired the rights to the life story of Thomas Jones, who earned a footnote in U.S. history when he delivered news to the White House that the Japanese had surrendered to end World War II. Filmmaker Quincy Perkins, 25-year-old, added an attention-getting twist. Jones, unaware of the telegram's contents, accidentally delayed its delivery by gobbling pancakes and flirting with a pretty waitress. After raising thousands of dollars for the film from former Philadelphia 76 owner Pat Croce, Perkins shot the short film in Ohio using actors, mixing it with compelling footage he claimed to have filmed of Jones before Jones died last year. Now Perkins is accused of having cooked up many of the story's details. Everyone knew what the message was, the coded surrender message. RCA had kept several teletype machines open for days. Jones typically delivered by bicycle but got a ride from a colleague. Said his surviving relation. It's a good enough story the way it is. It doesn't need to be changed to sound any better. Perkins didn't return numerous phone calls last week. Perkins did write, quote, I apologize to Mr. Croce for anything that I may have done or said that may have misled him to believe that the actor depicting Mr. Jones was the actual individual. I did not mean to declare as fact that the real life Jones ate pancakes, unquote. Jessica Alba forgave Playboy magazine this week for making her an unwitting cover girl after founder Hugh Hefner sent the actress a personal apology and pledged to donate money to her favorite charities. Alba had threatened to sue Playboy. That'll get you a personal apology. After the men's magazine printed a photo of the bikini-clad actress from her 2005 movie Into the Blue on the cover of its Mars issue, which she said duped readers into thinking she was nude inside. No, you're nude outside. We're all nude inside. In light of Mr. Hefner's personal apology, I have decided to discontinue my claims against them, Alba said in a written statement. This was never about money. Hey, I think that would be a great T-shirt, ladies and gentlemen. This was never about money. French police have apologized after one of their officers went shopping at Waterloo Railway Station in London carrying her gun. She was seen buying a newspaper with the firearm strapped to her waist in a breach of regulations allowing French officers to patrol the station's terminal, which connects to a railway station in Paris via the Channel. Immigration officers from each country operate in London and Paris to crack down on illegal entrants. The French officers are allowed to carry firearms at Waterloo, but only in the international section. The French have apologized for the incident. That'll teach you to buy newspapers. A police force apologized to a Daily Mail journalist today after accusing her of making, quote, offensive and belittling comments about Welsh people. North Wales police wrote to columnist Alison Pearson after receiving a complaint from a viewer of a BBC program. The police force accused Pearson of describing Welsh people as, quote, little Welshies, unquote. A police spokesman admitted Pearson had not appeared on the program on that date and apologized for the letter. North Wales police received a complaint from a member of the public. The complainant had contacted the BBC, and the police took that at face value. In a letter emailed to licensed gallery owners a couple months ago, Thomas Kincaid accused disgruntled ex-dealers and a former employee of launching media attacks on him, but he also said he might have behaved badly during a stressful time, now behind him, during which he overindulged in food and drink and gained 50 pounds. Quote, if during this period I ever offended anybody, I am sorry. Anyone who knows me knows I always try my best to be loving, he wrote in response to an article in the press in which some ex-gallery owners and others painted a harsh portrait of the self-proclaimed painter of light. Quote, the good news is I learned many valuable lessons from that phase of my life. With God's help and the support of my family and friends, I have returned balance to my life. And if you've seen me lately, you know I've lost over 50 pounds, and I feel terrific. The sworn testimony and interviews with the newspaper, some ex-dealers have accused Kincaid of ruining them financially while enriching himself and his business associates. His dreamily inspirational limited edition prints are steeped in Christian-oriented themes of faith and family values. They and others also described incidents in which an allegedly drunken Kincaid heckled illusionists Siegfried and Roy, cursed a former employee's wife who came to his side when he fell off a bar stool, fondled a startled woman's breasts at a signing party, and urinated on a Winnie the Pooh figure at the Disneyland Hotel in Anaheim. In his letter, Kincaid did not address any of the incidents specifically and has declined repeated interview requests. Thomas Kincaid, ladies and gentlemen. Painter of light. And from Congressman Jack Kingston, I want to apologize, dear Miss Cindy Sheehan, I want to apologize for my personal categorization of you, he called her a nutcase, and for allowing myself to get involved in such low-level name-calling. While you and I disagree on the war effort, I certainly did not intend to attack you personally by calling you a nutcase. All right, then. Oh, no, one more, ladies and gentlemen. From, the only trash story of the week that's worth anything, because it hints at corruption in the Murdoch Empire. Do you know about this story that there was a sting operation pulled on a part-time writer for the Page Six gossip column in the New York Post, in which, according to people who've heard the tape, he attempted to extort money from Los Angeles supermarket billionaire Ron Burkle in order to keep unkind or untrue items about Burkle from appearing in Page Six. Jared Paul Stern is the person who's laboring under this accusation at the moment. He said Friday night, quote, "I apologize for causing the New York Post any embarrassment after almost 11 years of loyal and dedicated service and hope they would not rush to judgment," unquote. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, it does come as news that the New York Post is capable of embarrassment. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Le Show, and Marion Shug Knight and his Death Row Records filed for bankruptcy this week, just hours before the rap mogul. I love that phrase. Rap mogul was expected to lose control of his, label in a $107 million civil court judgment by seeking bankruptcy protection. Knight, who co-founded Death Row Records in the 1990s, forestalled a court order that would have handed control of the label to a receiver. It's a special officer of the court, not a sexual position. Superior Court Judge Ronald Sohigian issued the order after finding Knight had failed to make good on the $107 million judgment obtained by Lydia Harris, who claimed he cheated her out of a 50% stake in Death Row. Knight's lawyer said he expected his client to get a fairer shake in federal bankruptcy court than in regular old state court. Sohigian said he would appoint the receiver 2 weeks ago unless Knight fully disclosed his finances in a debtor's exam for April 1st. The rap impresario failed to show up for the exam. Lawyers for Harris filed a petition seeking the receiver. The plaintiff's attorneys say 40-year-old Knight, who saw his rap empire wither while he served two stints in prison since 1996, had spent the last year playing games in court in order to avoid paying the judgment. Yeah, I know. It sounds bad, but it might be good.
It was kind of abrupt. Your lawyer called to interrupt. He says you're going bankrupt. It's such a damn shame. Your career, it's going to disrupt. Your vital juice is going to be cupped. Your nuptials won't be prenupped. Might even be denupped. Who was there to blame? All you did was make a fortune on thugging and drugging, on bugging the sisters while becoming A-listers. And pimping champagne just to tantalize the burbs with kicking new verbs and reverbs. Gangster fantasies blasting by our curbs. Here's the 411, the deal has long been done. From the time you took Death Row as your fictitious business frame, you were bankrupt in everything but name. Bankrupt Records, it doesn't sound so raw or real, but a deal's a deal. What's a couple murders between friends? This is how the story ends. Don't just play the game, take the name. We shoot to maim. Bankrupt Records. Way that you're alone. This is how the whole industry is going. Suing what they should be sowing. Trying to put downloads on the down low. Subsidizing your scary minstrel show. Covering your bling and your blow. But now here's the thing. Death Row, where is thy bling? So you were frightening the rubes, playing them for cubes, while you played with guns like life is an Eastwood Western, all cash and no carry. And you're just Dirty Harry. Bankrupt Records, it doesn't sound so raw or real, but a deal's a deal. What's a couple murders between friends? This is how the story ends. Don't just play the game, take the name. We shoot to maim. Bankrupt Records.
Like a fish gets caught on a hook, you'll go for a line, get hit with a book. Like a cop puts cuffs on a crook, baby, you'll get yours. Like a clown falls down from a slap, you'll fall for sweet talk and know you're a sap. Like a bear walks right in a trap, baby, it's yours. Like Eve, who tricked old Adam, had to pay the cost. A great voice boomed and said, "Madam, get lost."
Like a spider spins a web and waits for a fly, you'll fall for a gent, some hard-hearted guy. When he walks out whistling goodbye, watch those swinging doors, 'cause you'll get yours. Just like Eve, who tricked old Adam, she had to pay the cost. A great voice boomed and said, "Madam, get lost." Like a spider spins a web and waits for a fly, you'll fall for a gent, some hard-hearted guy. When he walks out whistling goodbye, watch those swinging doors, 'cause get yours.
Ladies and gentlemen, you might want to get ready because plans are underway for a massive bombing strike on sites where Iran is believed to be enriching uranium before President Bush leaves office. This according to the Rupert Murdoch-owned Times of London. Sunday Times of London, don't you know? Sunday paper. Both Bush and Dick Cheney, according to the Times, regard Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Iran's president, as a new Hitler. Not like the old Hitler, Saddam Hussein, the new Hitler, who cannot be allowed to acquire nuclear weapons and carry out his fantasy of wiping Israel off the map. It is not in their nature to bequeath the problem to their successors, a senior White House source said last week. Wasn't it just 2 weeks ago that President Bush said his successor will have to deal with getting troops out of Iraq? It's not in their nature to do that. He was going against his nature, ladies and gentlemen. This would be the White House's, this leak, I guess, would be the White House's answer to Mr. El-Baradei, who last week said, let's cool it on Iran. Let's not rush to crisis mode. And Seymour Hersh claims the Pentagon is also considering the use of a tactical nuclear weapon. That's cooling it. That leak is cooling it. Meanwhile, back where the good news is, Iraq is in a state of civil war, a senior Iraqi official admitted for the first time this week on the eve of today's third anniversary of the fall of Baghdad. This is more properly the fall of the statue of Saddam Hussein in Baghdad. On a daily basis, says Iraq's Deputy Interior Minister Hussein Ali Kamal, Iraq has been in an undeclared civil war for the past 12 months. On a daily basis, Shias, Sunnis, Kurds, and Christians are being killed, and the only undeclared thing is that a civil war has not been officially announced by the parties involved. Unquote. Well, we didn't declare war on Iraq when we invaded it, so it's even. Last month, the former prime minister said Iraq was in a state of civil war, but he was hastily contradicted by serving members of the Iraqi government. Kamal did say, although civil war was happening, it was not on a wide scale. It's a small-scale civil war. Those are really the best, don't you think? An internal U.S. government report rates the stability of six of Iraq's 18 provinces as serious, and another as critical, according to the New York Times. The report obtained from a government official in Washington who said the confidential assessment provided a more realistic gauge of stability in Iraq than recent public portrayals by senior military officers shows the country partitioning along ethnic and religious lines and warns of sectarian and ethnic friction even in areas U.S. officials had portrayed as peaceful. More realistic than what they're saying in public? How could that be? Radical Shiite cleric, can I say Shiite on the radio? Muqtada al-Sadr has blamed U.S.-led coalition forces for the rampant violence across Iraq. Quote, this is not the first time that the occupation forces and their death squads have resorted to killings, the cleric said during weekly prayers. That's not a prayer, Muqtada. Sadr also blamed the coalition forces for the sectarian strife, charging that, quote, they are killing religious Shiite, I guess you can't say it on the radio, religious Shiite clerics in order to start a sectarian strife. U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Zalmay Khalilzad was particularly targeted by Sadr. His presence in all the political meetings is a clear intervention of the U.S. in Iraqi affairs, Sadr said. He also suggested a plan for phased withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. Exit the cities, take positions outside the cities, and hand over security for the cities to the Iraqi forces, said the cleric. Thank you for the advice, sir. See the girl. You know that Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor prosecuting Lewis Scooter Libby for perjury, filed a 39-page document with the court this week. In it, he described for the first time a concerted action by multiple people in the White House using classified information to discredit, punish, or seek revenge against a critic of the war in Iraq. Fitzgerald placed Vice President Cheney at the center of that campaign. Most notably, the White House, which defended the president's authorization, which was revealed by Libby in that filing, the president's authorization of the, or basically his on-the-fly declassification of certain material to be leaked in this campaign. The White House did not defend the fact that much of the material that was leaked, the White House said it was leaked or declassified, to aid the American public, although it was leaked to a reporter for the New York Times who couldn't write anything about the subject because the New York Times had taken Judy Miller off the pre-war intelligence beat. So the White House didn't even know that. That's good intelligence. But also much of the material leaked to her had already been found to be, what was the Nixonian word? Inoperative? Inoperable? Inop? Shiite Muslim militias now pose the greatest threat to security in many parts of Iraq, having killed more people in recent months than the Sunni Arab-led insurgency. They most likely present the most daunting and critical challenge for Iraq's new government, say U.S. military and diplomatic officials. Says Major General Joseph Peterson, the top American officer working with Iraq's police force, quote, we know militias are an issue. We've asked both the Ministry of the Interior and the Ministry of Defense to work there. They recognize the problem, but there's been no decision as to what to do about it. Never too late. Babe. President Bush vows to transform Iraq into a beacon of democracy in the Middle East. His administration, though, has been scaling back funding for the main organizations trying to carry out his visions by building democratic institutions such as political parties and civil society groups. This, according to the Washington Post, the administration has limited new money for traditional democracy promotion in budget requests. Some organizations face funding cutoffs this month. Others struggle to stretch their resources through the summer. The shortfall threatens projects that teach Iraqis how to create and sustain political parties, think tanks, I think we can do without those, human rights groups, independent media outlets, trade unions, and other elements of democratic society. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, in the good news from Iraq, according to the British newspaper The Guardian, Iraq's Interior Ministry is refusing to deploy thousands of police recruits who've been trained by the United States and Britain, and it's hiring its own men, and putting them on the streets. This according to Western security advisors. This is frustrating U.S. and British efforts to build up a non-sectarian Iraqi police force, which would not be infiltrated by partisan militias. There's that word again. The disclosure highlights growing concern about the role of militias and their links to senior Iraqi politicians. The Interior Ministry has not deployed any graduates of the Civilian Police Assistance Training Team, a joint U.S.-British unit, for the past 3 months. The ministry's refusal to use the new graduates is causing alarm. There are concerns about the infiltration of the police by extremist groups, and the coalition is right to be concerned about transparency. Senior ministry officials say they refuse to deploy the graduates because they have no control over the team's selection process. In addition to all of that, of course, Tom DeLay quit his job this week as a member of the Congress, not going to run for re-election anymore, still under indictment. the House, no, sorry, Congress gave up on trying to pass, at least for a while, an immigration bill as efforts to reach a compromise collapsed. Republicans went into the Easter recess, having given up for the moment on passing a budget. The president's polling figures in most polls are at an all-time low. Might be time for a phone call.
Lame Eagle, A43, that's a kind of defeatist code name. Well, Carl turned the code names over to the Secret Service, and some of those guys against explicit orders are reading the papers. So how you doing aside from today's code name? Reason I called, worried about you, thinking about you, looking at your approval ratings, wondering how low they could... Okay, I get the point. You're commiserationing with me, and I appreciate the bejeebledees out of it, but don't cry for me, Archie or Tina, because we got a new chief of staff. We got a good, strong team. We're going to have folks in congressional liaison whose job it will be to actually have liaison with the congressional. So,
well, glad to hear it. Sure, it will make Barr less eager to keep me up half the night with advice she wants passed on to you by a source you might be half willing to listen to. Sweet. Look, 41, on the road to the mountaintop, a lot of the walking is uphill. That's never stopped me before.
You haven't had the members of Congress of your own party in full revolt before.
That's no more a revolt than what's going on in Iraq is a civil war.
Well, you got me there. Look, Sprout, your people couldn't get an immigration bill through.
I know it.
They couldn't get a budget through.
I know it.
If not now, pretty soon they won't be able to get a resolution through honoring Mother Teresa.
Okay, but in fairness, a lot of our base is not that fond of any Catholics, even the saintly ones. So
you really got only two choices at this point in time, 43. You can have your chief of staff bring in a whole new team, which would basically be
your old team.
Or you can get nibbled to death by the ducks in your own party trying to flap their way to independence because you're poison at the polls.
Now, first thing first, I'm not poison. I mean, I may not be what you call health food, but...
Look, don't mean to nag. That's your mother's job.
But you're nagging like Helen Thomas on a Xanax binge. And second thing, Josh Bolton has got more new blood in him than a dozen of your tired old internationalistas. You know, the Republicans down on the Hill, they're going to come over to their senses during their Easter recess. They're going to realize they got one president. And who's the fellow that said, we all stick together or we're all going to stick separately?
Don't remember that fella.
Yeah.
But 43, just getting a Joe Lieberman at defense to start walking the war back from the brink would just do so much to
postpone the day when all Mid-Easterners will live in freedom. No, 41, you make a good point. And if I decide that I'm the one that I'm going to repudiate if I, instead of you, I swear you're the one I'm going to call for guidance.
You know, Colin called me the other day.
Colin is yesterday's 9 News.
Colin's a good man. That's why he called.
Yeah.
He was giving me a heads-up type thing that he can't hold off making a book deal too much longer because all the stuff he was going to say is coming out anyway, and that just lowers his price. So,
hey, 41, you just let our friend Colin know that whatever's in his book is going to be leaked by me first so he can kiss his big advance goodnight. Yeah, we're going to declassify whatever we have to.
Is that Carl's advice?
Carl's a little busy reading depositions right about now, but that's the census.
The consensus?
The pro-census and the consensus.
And, of course, now that he's out of office, your friend Mr. DeLay might just discover his singing voice.
You know what, 41? If I wanted to be inundated with nothing but bad news, I'd pay attention to the briefing summaries. So, you know, just tell Mom I appreciate her concern, but maybe the both of you should concentrate on giving old Jeb some useful advice, because hurricane season's coming up, and I don't know, this time around, Florida might just not be flying first class. Well, admire your spunk. 41, sir. When you believe what you're doing is right, the Lord gives you all the spunk you need.
Well, that is great. I'll tell Barr you said hello.
Yes, sir. Please tell her that. You take care, 41.
You too, 43.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, won't you let me read the trades for you? Won't you? Please? First, from armscontrol.org. U.S. missile defense capability, a mystery. Oh, will I read that for you? Is the fledgling ground-based mid-course defense system deployed nearly 18 months ago by the Pentagon capable of destroying an incoming long-range missile? In March, lawmakers discovered the answer depends on whom you ask. Pentagon officials responsible for the system say the answer is yes, but the Pentagon's independent weapons tester says insufficient proof exists to draw a conclusion. A March report by the Government Accountability Office, which conducts studies for Congress, agrees with the tester. Despite the system's evolving status and the fact that it has yet to be declared operational, top Pentagon officials indicated in March to the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Strategic Forces that it is ready to perform its mission. At a March 20th briefing with reporters, Lieutenant General Henry Obering, director of the project, asserted the system's ground and flight testing gave him confidence it could, quote, shoot down an incoming missile, and that testing had not revealed any problems that would be, quote, showstoppers, unquote. Now, from Ad Age, alcohol industry watchdog groups are accusing Anheuser-Busch of marketing beer to underage drinkers after the brewer announced a partnership to advertise on a major cell phone service. Announcing the deal, Tim Murphy, Anheuser-Busch's senior director of creative development, said a deal with Mobi TV, allowing it to advertise to the network's 1 million subscribers, will allow the brewer to market Bud Light and Budweiser Select to 21 to 35-year-olds. The 21 to 35-year-old beer drinker is increasingly tech-savvy, Murphy said in a statement. But a spokesman for the Marin Institute, an alcohol industry watchdog, accused the brewer of attempting to skew younger. The Beer Institute's marketing guidelines says brewers must confine their magazines, TV, and radio to places where at least 70% of the audience is expected to be adults of legal drinking age. A Mobi TV spokesman said he didn't have specific figures, but said that most of the service's users were between 18 and 40 years old. Meanwhile, in Las Vegas, according to Ad Age, marketing's role on mobile phones takes center stage as the wireless industry opens one of its largest conferences ever, CTIA Wireless 2006. How to advertise on mobile search, mobile video, interstitials, opt-in procedures. Those avenues are top of mind in a conference usually dominated by discussions of phones, phone features, and other technical issues. With 200 million phones in circulation in the United States and 80% of them capable of downloading video, sending text messages, and completing so-called other data-enabled functions, the wireless industry has begun focusing on their potential for marketing and devising ways to attract more brands to the medium. MSNBC.com led off the announcements at the conference with news it was testing an ad-subsidized video service for cell phones in which subscribers will have the option of receiving news and videos and to save stories for later reference. Microsoft is the sponsor. Yeah, some sponsor they half own. Oh, I see. There's still a lot of figuring out, cautioned Lewis Gump, chairman of the Mobile Marketing Association and vice president of mobile at the Weather Channel. Gump was concerned with one of mobile's most ticklish issues. Marketers might be drawn to the mobile phone because the devices are now indispensable to many consumers, but at the same time, consumers view the phone as an intimate device and might resent a marketing intrusion. Gump and others are concerned that if subscribers are spammed with mobile marketing, the medium's potential will go the way of email as a marketing tool. Todd Anderman, president of Dennis Digital, says enthusiasm for mobile advertising is running so high he has to calm down marketers who want to do things like a mobile blast, sending messages to all customers of a given carrier. Something not possible, because carriers wouldn't allow it and subscribers would be alienated. It's 1996 all over again, he said. Calendar observation that rings so true when I read the trades for you. Ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the aforementioned Meredith Vieira, who's leaving The View and joining the Today program, made news of another sort a couple years ago when she sang at a correspondent's dinner a little custom-written ditty for her and happened to mention that in passing that her boss, Barbara Walters, had had, this was a facetious reference, her boss, Barbara Walters, had had 82 facelifts. Barbara Walters took severe umbrage to that, and I thought at the time that what she needed was not umbrage, but a song. And now, ladies and gentlemen, that song is on my new CD in your stores now called Dropping Anchors, and it goes a little bit, it goes exactly like this.
Facelifts may seem like a lot. Talk about wailing in the years. Tightening a tittle or smoothing a jot. Facing down all of my fears. It hasn't been easy and it hasn't been fun. Going through what I've gone through. But one thing I'm proud of, like a dad of his son. It's been 54, not 82. How could you have 82 facelifts? What could be left to lift? The scalpel can't be your constant companion. Surgery is a gift. If I had had 82 facelifts, my nose would be on the floor. My brow wouldn't furrow, my lips wouldn't bend. I'd look as bizarre as Liz Taylor's best friend. I'd take 2 hours to cut and a half year to mend. So I won't have 82 facelifts. I'm happy with 54. Who could perform 82 facelifts, seeing the same new face? You can't remove that many wrinkles without something to put in their place. If I had had 82 facelifts, I'd have to go back for more. It would be as addictive as tobacco or crack. My skin would have been pulled halfway down my back. I'd be subsidizing an obvious quack. So I won't have 82 facelifts. I'm happy with 54.
goes. Ladies and gentlemen, that you don't even have to buy the record. Just go in the store and thoughtfully finger the merchandise, and you'll be doing so much good for the proprietor of this broadcast, whom you turn to every week, don't you? Every once in a while? First time ever? Thank you. That's going to conclude this week's just thoughtfully finger the merchandise. That's really all I ask. That concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same states. That's all record stores want now is you to thoughtfully finger the merchandise while they still exist. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Available on channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And be just like you, thoughtfully fingering the merchandise if you agree. Join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.